Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Thanks to Pete Medhurst for getting us up to date, as always. Great to hear more of Pete in the late afternoons and evenings as he's getting you ready for Nats baseball and yesterday breaking down Caps hockey. We're G&D. You're listening to 106.7 The Fan. The NFL and the Players Association did change the date that players have to opt out by yesterday, Danny, as they came to a new agreement about 10 days after they came to their last agreement. So you have until Thursday, August 6th, this Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern, if you're an NFL player, to opt out. So I was wondering, though, what does that mean as far as leaving after the fact? Like Lorenzo Cain is an example, playing with the Milwaukee Brewers. I'm sure you saw 2 days ago decided he's opting out. He's actually off to an amazing start. He was hitting well. He was driving the baseball. He was playing his normal Gold Glove defense in center. But he saw what happened with the Marlins and the Cardinals, and he's got a wife and kids at home. And I don't know if he feels like, you know, that the game is just different or that the sport isn't worth it right now. But he said, I've changed my mind. I'm actually going home. So my thought was, well, are NFL players, we're making so much of a deal about this opt-out date. Are they not allowed to opt out after the fact? Pro Football Talk has a report on this. They obtained a document where a player can still opt out after August 6th at 4 p.m. if, and only if, apparently, they receive a new diagnosis that he suffers from one of the higher risk factors. So if that occurs, the player will have 1 week after receiving the new diagnosis to opt out. So I don't know what that full list of factors are, but presumably, like if a guy finds out they have type 2 diabetes or that they have some type of issue, then they have a week where they could still opt out, whether that's after August 6th, you know, this month, or that's in week 4. But I guess otherwise, if you don't get some new diagnosis or a doctor doesn't tell you that you're at risk, after Thursday, you're in it to win it, which is interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. So, gosh, this is such a bizarre thing, and I've kind of gone back and forth on some elements of it. But if somebody has an extra risk factor, or in their mind, it's an extra risk factor, even if it's not, does that make sense? What I'm saying, like in my mind, I'm going, well, if it's me, I'm heavier than I should be. I wouldn't consider myself like big, gross, and fat. I'm a little pudgy. I'm not in good cardiovascular shape. I could talk myself into, man, am I more at risk than, you know, than a guy that can run a marathon?
Yeah, that's probably not going to work. They've got a list of things, you've got to check.
Right, I don't even mean for that part of it, for like the doctor's part of it. I'm just thinking about a guy like Lorenzo Cain opting out, or somebody that's otherwise healthy, quote-unquote, opting out. Like, I could see if you just don't feel comfortable. And I know that it's easier for people to sling their go, I don't feel comfortable at my job, but I still have to go. Okay, well, be as good an NFL player, and then you can make these choices along with these guys. But I guess I could see if you're not totally comfortable not being able to psych yourself up for to knowing that you're going to
well, you
you're
have
already
until
at risk
August
anyway.
6th to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've had all this time. They still have time. Anybody can make the decision for any reason right now to opt out of the season. You don't have to explain yourself at all. Danny Ruye of the Washington football team can call up someone in the front office or Ron Rivera this evening and say, hey, not playing, not comfortable, thanks a lot, and you don't have to play. It's just that after August 6th, you're going to have to prove essentially that you're at risk. There's one other caveat too, which I should point out, which is I think pretty obvious, but the second category of players who will be able to get out of the agreement after Thursday is if a player is a family member, die or become hospitalized because of the coronavirus and COVID-19, that player would be eligible at that point to opt out and leave, which goes without saying, right? I mean, if your wife or a mom or a brother or family member has the coronavirus, you know, and if they have the virus, you're probably not opting out right away because it's not like you're going to go spend time with them immediately. But it's going to lead to, if it's your immediate family, you needing to be around for the kids or taking care of people or what have you. So those guys, along with that second group of players that are deemed higher risk with changing diagnoses, they're going to be eligible. The only other thing PFT suggests, they said, look, other than that, you're kind of stuck, is that players could retire and unretire. If you retire, in air quotes, and unretire, then maybe there's going to be a financial part of this where you've got to pay the team back. You know, if you've got money coming in when you retire or whatever, you have to refund the teams for unearned signing bonus payments and things like that. But I wonder if it gets to that level where, you know, a few weeks into the season, someone completely changes their mind. They don't have a family member who's sick. They can't get any doctor to sign off that they have a change in diagnosis. So then they just say they're retiring, and then they come back at the start of next season. I wonder if we see something like that.
Yeah, they could Gronk it, right, where you rest up anyway, and you feel all of a sudden, I feel miraculously better. I'm not sore anymore. I'm further away from whatever injury that was so nagging that I had to retire. That's a way to do it. I mean, and then I suppose everything would be reinstated, right? In terms of maybe you pay that back initially, and then it would be held basically like a separate account for you, so that as soon as you keep your seat warm, and then maybe come back in that way. There are going to be ways to get around this thing if people aren't comfortable. I think
players wanted a couple more small windows. So the reason they originally wanted to wait on the opt-out date is they wanted to see, just as an example, when you go start going 11-on-11. In pads in practice during this pandemic, they wanted to know if they're going to feel safe, you know, if they feel like everything's being done in a way that can keep them safe. So like after padded practices began, the thought was maybe a lot of players might opt out then, or after games begin, they wanted to be able to opt out because, oh, well, the games are impossible to keep us safe and it's just not going to work. But the association, understandably, wants one thing, and the league can't have that. I mean, they can't just give you an open-door policy to come and go as you please, necessarily. Like, oh, well, practices start, and I don't feel as good after these practices. I think I'm going to get sick potentially, so I'll opt out. That's one thing. But for the union supposedly to want the ability, even after games began, if they don't feel like everything's up to par, it's going to work, that you can just hop out kind of without any issues, I don't necessarily fault the league for that. I mean, there's got to be a date, whether it's August 6th or August 15th. We could argue over that. But you can't just have like an open-door policy to come and go as you please, in my opinion.
Agreed. Now you start to hurt the integrity of it. And I understand that there are bigger fish to fry than, you know, a week three game between the Ravens and Bengals. But at the same time, you've got to have some kind of sort of uniform policy. So if you want to push the date back, push the date back. If you want to push it till the night before, you know, right after roster cut down, so a bunch of guys can pull a Sue Cravens. Okay, I guess I can understand that in this year above others, but I'm with you. You got to have some sort of hard and fast date to kind of be either in or out.
Derek Jeter, the Hall of Famer and great New York Yankee, believe it or not, now 46 years old. That should make us feel a little bit older today. Spoke about the Miami Marlins. He's the CEO. He's part owner and runs that ball club. They have had the outbreak heard around Major League Baseball and around the country. And he talked about the team and the fact that, you know, they just got complacent. They did not take all of the precautions necessary, and some of the players may have slipped up. This was Jeter talking with the media yesterday.
Guys have been going through 3 weeks of spring training, like 4 weeks, and everyone had tested negative. They're all together. And they had a false sense of security. So they let their guard down. As an organization, we have to pay the price, bottom line. Moving forward, obviously MLB is up the protocols and they made some changes to the protocols, and we have as well. And we just can't make any mistakes. And it's that's the bottom line. We've been given an opportunity to hit the reset button. And moving forward, we just cannot make any mistakes here.
Derek Jeter yesterday. So it's really easy to crush that comment or the team and say, well, you can't let your guard down. You just can't. It's a non-issue if you don't let your guard down. You're seeing it around the country a little bit. Even people who are complying, even people who are following the rules, even people who are masking up and who take this virus very seriously. I consider myself in that category. You know, my wife and I did eat at a restaurant, socially distant, for the first time since March. The other night, I mentioned this, we went out to Theismann's, and I felt incredibly safe there. It was really clean. Like, everything that they did to make sure that we felt good. You know, you're probably eating a meal in a cleanlier way than you probably ever eaten one before in that restaurant at that moment. But is that a sign in some way that we're letting our guard down? It probably is. You referenced on the show the other day, you were hanging out with your buddies, or you said your wife had a happy hour.
Mm-hmm.
Not judging. I've hung out with a couple of friends, whatever. But people are, in some ways, they're saying, listen, I'm going to be safe. I'm going to do this in a way where we all can be distant and do what we need to do. But to some extent, it's been months. I'm going to get a little normalcy back. You're not a crazy person who's having a party with 30 people. No, I've heard people on the station saying that they've gone to parties or whatever. We're all letting our guards down a little bit. So while you can kill the Marlins if you want to, or kill the Cardinals, if they're going out to bars, that's stupid. If they're going out to casinos, that's ridiculous. But the idea that after weeks of testing every day and being negative, you're not going to just naturally let your guard down a little bit, I think we're being naive and we're lying if we're all not fighting that in our own personal lives a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's fair. You know, because initially there's a lot of fear with all the rules and regulations and what we knew, what we didn't know. I mean, again, the first thing we heard was it can live on surfaces forever. So everyone's bleaching every countertop, every doorknob every day, every grocery delivery is getting wiped down. Well, then we realize actually that's not necessarily the case. We can get better. But remember, the initial thing was fear. So, yes, you let your guard down some. That's natural. I frankly don't believe Derek Jeter here. And this is just me evaluating it. Sounds like these guys went out to a bar. And maybe somebody went and got coffee. Maybe somebody went and got milk or whatever it was. And it was, well,
for the
casual,
record, explain, because people listening heard that one cut and they probably don't know what he said yesterday. So give a little more detail on what you're talking about.
Sure. Jeter was like, it was just a small slip up. They let their guard down. I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but a couple guys went and got a cup of coffee. One person went out to eat. This was just something that could have happened to anybody. There are too many reports or too many, you know, indicators that that's not what this was. That it sounds like guys were out on the town and they were flouting the rules, didn't take it serious at all. No one was in a mask. No one was doing the things that they were supposed to be doing. And it was more important for them to have fun. And what it did is it cost not only them games. I frankly don't care about the Marlins games. I care about the games that cost the Nationals. I care about the 7 games that cost the Phillies, who didn't do anything wrong. The teams that did what they were supposed to do, who were trying to compete for a title, got screwed over by a rebuilding second division low payroll club that has no designs of winning for a couple years and is trying to cut costs at every corner. That I'd be really frustrated. Andrew McCutchen said as much in some comments, I believe it was either last night or this morning, being like, we're minding our business. We've had a bunch of stuff canceled without any of our players testing positive because of the dumb Marlins and what they did.
Yeah, let's listen to Jeter talking about his team not following the protocols properly. This is more of Jeter, who runs the Marlins.
What it boiled down to on this particular trip was guys were around each other, they got relaxed, and they let their guard down. They were getting together in groups. They weren't wearing masks as much as they should have. They weren't social distancing. Everyone was getting tested. We went the whole spring training 2.0 without a positive. And the entire traveling party got a little too comfortable. Should they have been doing that? No. And that's been addressed.
Jeter yesterday with the media. Yeah, there's no doubt. When you talk about like your family, my family, people who are doing what they can, we're doing more than the Marlins did. If they did it, quote unquote, the right way or were more vigilant, would this be different? Absolutely. Does it mean there would be no cases? I don't think so. I think you can do everything correctly and everything right, and there will still potentially be cases. You referenced Andrew McCutchen. This was McCutchen. This is Credit the Athletic talking about the Marlins.
You know, you brought up the Marlins. I'm just curious about this. At any point, did you ever get angry? Let me just ask about that then. Did you ever get angry at the Marlins?
I was upset at everything that's transpired through whoever decided to, you know, step out or not necessarily follow the health and safety protocol. That upset me. What made me angry was we as the Phillies, and we were the ones having to pay for that.
Right.
Being that we did what we needed to do. We followed the health and safety protocol. You know, we felt that that was important. We understood that's what we needed to do to be able to play this game. And we did everything right, and we paid for it. And so for me, that was upsetting.
And that's why baseball's going to do everything they can not to shut the season down, because you'll have guys like McCutchen who will feel like, I did everything I was supposed to, and I don't get to make my money, and I don't get to play. And that's grievances galore. I mean, just wait till all the cases baseball's going to have to hear at that point. But that was him with Jason Stark on a podcast with The Athletic. We're Grant and Danny. You're listening to The Fan. Next, we'll go around the NFL, including a thought on Antonio Brown and a team that is keeping close tabs on him on GND. GND 106.7 The Fan, a chance to go around the NFL with the latest as camps are underway. Some news and notes trickling out of complexes all over the country. Teams training at their facilities, not going away for camp this year. We will start you off with the Packers out at Lambeau in Green Bay, where Aaron Rodgers was asked about the protocols the NFL has in place and his confidence that they'll work throughout camp.
I think the protocols that we have in place here, are such that I think it gives us a really good chance. You know, we've been obviously testing every day, and you know, there's tracking devices, and just the rules of the facility are obviously a lot different this year than years past, and gives us the best chance to get into the season and finish the season.
He's right. They're doing everything they can, and I'm sure it does feel like, as a player, Danny, when you're testing day in and day out, you get that kind of false sense of security, I'm sure. But it doesn't take much, man. Ask the Marlins, ask the Cardinals. The next thing you know, it's not like we rule that as, oh, there's an outbreak with the team. We rule that as everyone wants the leagues shut down now. That's kind of the leap that we make. Team has cases. This can't work. Shut everything down. So it can change very quickly. Rodgers also talked about his future and how long he sees himself playing.
Like I've said before, a lot of the relationships that are still here are with those guys. You know, it's with the training room guys, the equipment staff, Adam and his staff, you know, people who've been here a long time and probably be here long after, my time is gone here. But that's where a lot of the memories, you start talking about things from the 2000s to the 2010 era, it was 5 years, 6 years when I was here. There's just not that many people still around who can relate to some of the stories. And that's the way the business goes. You know, it's a short-term deal. And guys like myself are lucky enough to play a long time with the same team. It's those relationships that you savor and you appreciate.
Green Bay was 13-3 last year, Jeeps. They probably should have been, if you look at some of the math and some of the metrics. It's a team that was, 15th in scoring, 9th defensively. They slowed the pace of play, fewer plays running the game when they were on the field than some of the other teams. They probably should have been 9-7 and just okay. And they drafted like a team that's on the rebuild, not a team that was a step or two, a play or two away from being a Super Bowl contender. It's very, very interesting to watch what they do this year. They're acknowledging, or they feel like Rodgers is in the twilight. I feel like that guy could still be excellent if you give him a little bit more on offense. They're one playmaker away opposite Adams, and having Aaron Jones out of the backfield with being really good. They drafted a power running back and still don't have a receiver to speak of outside of one of the best in football. A fascinating team.
They are, and I think they're going to have a chance to win the North because the Vikings are also going to take a step back this year. But I would take a very strong hard under on 12.5 wins for them this season. I will say about Rodgers, it's been 3 years since he threw 27 touchdowns.
Isn't that amazing?
It's not that crazy a total. Like 2016, he had 40. He hasn't had 27 since. There was obviously a year in there where he didn't play 16 games. Last year, he was amazing in terms of 26 touches, 4 picks, did a lot of things well. But that offense is kind of transitioned now to being a lot more balanced and run heavy. Let's go to Philadelphia and Lincoln Financial Field, where Dateline Philly, the Eagles, are dealing with a head coach who's got the coronavirus. He's coaching virtually. If this isn't 2020, I don't know what is. Doug Peterson, while talking with the coronavirus from his house, saying that he still has full confidence in the NFL to have a 2020 season.
I'm very comfortable and confident that the protocols that we have in place at NovaCare are for the best interest of the football team and all those all those you know that enter that building, and it still is a very safe environment. And one of the things that, you know, we all need to learn, and what I need to learn taken away from this, is obviously we need to protect ourselves when we're in the community, away from the building, continue to wash our hands, wear our masks, do the social distancing that medical teams and doctors have prescribed.
Scary, man. I'm glad he's okay. Sounds like full recovery is in the works, but better now than in the throes of the season, right? Once everybody's together and day in and day out, and you know, you get a Marlins or you get a Cardinals or that's
what. Oh, imagine if it happened in season. Yeah. He's missing games. What right. A difference.
Yeah, no question about it. But yeah, I don't know, man. It we keep coming back to the same questions overall about what can we tolerate, how much is too much. But if it's going to happen, glad that it's going to happen now.
Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan, the latest on the NFL as we hop around the league. We talked about this very early in the show today, but we had not yet played this audio. The Seahawks are apparently interested in Antonio Brown. Now, the Seahawks are this team that's kind of famous for flirtation, where they say, yeah, we like the idea of Josh Gordon. Yeah, we really thought about signing Colin Kaepernick, and now they're considering Antonio Brown. What does that really mean? Well, their head coach is Pete Carroll, and he says, Facebook style, it's complicated.
What I'd say to you is just what we always say, because it's what we always do and who we are. John is competing at every turn, and there's never been a process, unless we just missed it, that we weren't involved with to understand what the chances were helping our club. And he's all over it. He knows what's going on right now, and as much as you can. And it remains a, you know, it's a very complex situation, and we just need to see where it fits somewhere down the road. Not, you know, and that's all I got for you.
I'm on record. I think he plays for the Seahawks. If it's not Seattle, it will be a contender. And I believe Antonio Brown will play in the second half this year after serving a suspension. And I will be surprised if you don't see him playing in a playoff game this year.
That window is open, man. DK Metcalf is better than people thought. Tyler Lockett is pretty good. Adding that, you know, sort of injection of life, again, if he's on team get right at some point in the second half of the season after serving a suspension, realizing his NFL career may be hanging by a thread. But Russell Wilson's in his prime, perennial MVP candidate. They are good enough to win a Super Bowl in a really tough division where San Francisco's coming off what should have been a Super Bowl title, probably. You've still got enough personnel on defense to compete at a high enough level, but it's Russell Wilson's show now. Give him an extra weapon. That team could be really dangerous in January.
This date in Nats history still to come on the show before we get out of here. There's another angle on the XFL with The Rock that we can still hit. And we can preview the night that will be a busy August in sports with all of the games coming back at the same time. You are listening to The Fan. If you missed Barry Sperluga of the Washington Post on the Nats return to the field tonight, of course, you can hear that game just after 7 right here on The Fan. Make sure you listen to Barry's interview with us on radio.com, the rewind function, or you can go to grantanddanny.com/audio, thefandc.com for any of your podcasting needs for G&D. We wondered if any teams would do this, and we might have our answer here, Danny. We were just talking about this at the end of last week. What happens if you're an NFL team and all three of your quarterbacks who deal in such close proximity on the practice field and in the meeting room get COVID at the exact same time and none can play on Sunday? Are you basically pulling a Washington signing Josh Johnson in December scenario where you got a big game coming up and now you've got some random dude handing the ball off because all your quarterbacks are sick? Well, how about the Bengals? Zach Taylor told reporters today that they are having every single one of their position groups meet in person like they normally would, except quarterback. Joe Burrow, Ryan Finley, Brandon Allen, and their fourth QB, who's going to be handing the ball off during training camp. I don't even know who it is, to be honest with you. They are all meeting basically from home via Zoom after practices from various locations. They're not having them near each other when they don't have to be. And even at practice, they're staggering drills and having them in different areas so that they don't interact that much. So how weird is that? I mean, I just know from covering football, the quarterback lockers are always right next to each other. Now they have separated as many of the position groups as possible with lockers. So the tight end's next to the corner, is next to the kicker. It used to be all the tight ends together, all the quarterbacks together, and it helped. It helped guys ask questions and answer questions for each other. It helped in training and preparation and quizzing each other. You can't do that this year, part of many of the changes that are happening in the NFL. But on top of that, if you're Burrow and you want to pick Ryan Finley's brain, who was going through last year what you are this year in Cincy under Taylor, you're doing it over the phone or via text message, I guess, because they don't want those guys hanging out at all. Another reason why these young quarterbacks like Tua might have an even harder transition. He can't hang out with Ryan Fitzpatrick and just go out and have drinks, you know, every night at training camp and try to learn from the veteran.
It's a factor. And I'll tell you what, this is smart. Smart by the Bengals to do this. It may seem overkill, and I'm sure those guys will roll their eyes after 3 weeks of this where a dude's in a meeting room all by himself. You don't have that normal camaraderie that everybody's had since Pop Warner football or wherever the first year you watch film is. But this is smart. Do this. Do exactly this. And it, you know, you're either taking every possible precaution or you risk getting caught with your pantaloons down. And here's the thing. If you don't have an outbreak and nothing ever happens to your team, all you did was, you know, inconvenience yourself slightly for the span of several months. This is way different level of commitment than just basically saying live away from your family for the entirety of the season or the remainder of the restart, a la the NBA and NHL bubbles that are taking place. This is smart by the Bengals to do that. I'm all in on that move.
You got to give the teams credit because it does seem like they're doing everything that they can. Another example of that from that same drawer is the Saints. New Orleans rented out 4 floors of the Lowe's Hotel in downtown Nollins to create an optional bubble-like atmosphere for players and staff members, doesn't even just have to be players, who choose to stay there during training camp. So if you would be better off, if you think you're better served, Drew Brees or anybody else, you know, getting away from the distractions at home and all your kids and the wife and being at the house and having the baby run up and scribble on your notepad while you're jotting down your notes or whatever it is, if you think you're better at your job when you are able to fully concentrate without the distractions of home, the Saints are giving you that choice by renting out 4 floors of the Lowe's Hotel. Now, here's what I don't know. Unless you have no other people other than Saints players and staffers there, then you're not really in a bubble because you're relying upon those other people who aren't being tested to kind of live their life properly as well. But when you rent out the 4 floors, if you just stay on those floors and you have your gym and you have everything you need, that's great. But at some point, aren't you parking? Aren't you coming through the lobby? Aren't you hitting the button in the elevator?
Yeah.
I guess it's better than nothing, but it's not foolproof. But that's kind of a creative idea as well by the Saints to rent out a hotel.
Makes sense. Again, you've got to go above and beyond just to make sure. And if nothing happens, it'll have seemed like overkill. But what's the price? What's the cost? Right. This is an extra layer of challenge that everybody has to face. So if you don't take it seriously, you might get away with it. The same way that this is the way I think of this, and this is very, not to be glib about this, it's a serious thing, but every time you drive drunk, you don't necessarily get an accident and have something terrible happen. Sometimes you make it home. It doesn't mean it was the right call. You see what I mean? Like either you take precaution and you don't do it 100% of the time, or every time you commit the act, you're more and more at risk than you would have been otherwise. So this is going above and adding extra layers of protection. And it makes good sense to me. Teams that think outside the box, I think, will be rewarded with health.
Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. You can hit him up on Twitter at FunnyDanny. I'm at Grant H. Paulson. One of the huge stories in sports over the last day has been that The Rock is leading a group that bought the XFL. We had a great convo about this in the 11 o'clock hour if you want to go back and listen. But one thing you brought up right at the end of our discussion, and we were getting to a guest, so I wanted to go back to it really quickly. Mm-hmm. You had said, you know, that there's no reason – I'm paraphrasing, for the NFL basically to latch onto one of these leagues, which is maybe what it would take for an XFL to work, right, is to do for the XFL what, like, the NBA does for the WNBA. And the WNBA loses $10 to $12 million a year and just keeps existing because the NBA wants it to, essentially. And my question would be this, because I agree with you. I don't think the NFL needs to do that because they have college football. I also think it would guarantee the success of one of these leagues, but I understand why they don't want to. Is it at any point, though, it's certainly a conversation, worth the league considering what is the value of year-round football? I mean, there's a reason they've changed their schedule so many times over the offseason to try to become a year-round entity, whereas now the NFL goes straight into the XFL, and you've got football for the entire calendar year. What kind of value comes out of that for the National Football League? What about the ability to test, you know, with rules, to almost like baseball does with the minor leagues? The runner at second was a smashing success. Now they're trying it in Major League Baseball. You know, the DH now carrying over, whatever it is. But if they want to test rules, you could do that with the XFL. They want to test technologies. The first time the XFL happened, and already now the second time it's happened, as well as the Alliance of American Football, the NFL steals some of the things that they do with microphones and tech and the ability to do things with referees. I wonder where the line would be. We haven't gotten there yet, where the NFL would say it's worth it to us. But there are clearly benefits, not enough of them, but I just wonder how far from that line we are, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense, and it's a great question. Here's where I think would have to happen, or what I think would have to happen. A dramatic change in the landscape of college football. Because right now, the NFL, if an owner of the NFL team doesn't lift a finger, and there is a ready-made, ready-equipped, excellent talent pool with which to populate his league. If he doesn't do anything, he's already got that. He's already here. They can already cut guys summarily because there's five more ready to take their place. You do the slightest thing. They don't like the way you dressed one day in a meeting. You're gone because they've got a million guys over ready to take that spot. If college football doesn't exist in the way that it does now in a decade or two decades or whatever because of paying players or, you know, licensing agreements or just the landscape changes, right, then I think an upstart league would make a lot more sense for the NFL. Because right now what a league would do, you'd ask an owner, hey, please send millions of dollars to this team in the hopes that one or two guys per season can make the back end of your roster for the most part. There's the occasional PJ Walker, which might catch some passes or you know, get a Taysom Hill treatment at most. But for the most part, it's guys that couldn't make NFL rosters without more seasoning. That's not a great investment for an NFL owner at this point with a ready-made talent pool. If that changes, I think a minor league that's directly tied to the NFL starts to become, A, really appealing, B, make a lot more sense. And the extra bonuses are the things that you're talking about, right? Rule experimentation, TV coverage, access, those sorts of things. You can try it out on a lesser proving ground, start to become, you know, excellent bonuses for your investment.
Yeah, I just think there is a merit and a usefulness to that. There is a practicality to having that feeding ground, which college football will never become. You know, college football will give you the players that you talk about, but the NCAA is not going to do things for the NFL to try to essentially test out rules and opportunities and technologies. And you've seen some of the great things that we get in the NFL that have come from some of those upstart leagues, where you have that ability to try some things you're not going to try in the NFL. So there is value. The question is how much, and is it enough? G&D on the Fan. We will hit the best of the rest, the leftovers, and we'll get you this date in Nats history before we get out of here next on the Fan. Danny, I'm trying to pull up an hourly forecast right now to get a look-see. Now, what kind of weather we're anticipating tonight? The sun is actually shining right now in Lorton, Virginia, and there is very little chance of precipitation at the moment, about 5%. Looks like 7 p.m. this evening, still very little chance of rain.
Okay.
So I'm thinking baseball gets played today. Now, things could be very different, I guess, in Southeast D.C., but what are you hearing over in your neck of the woods? We're going to be all right? Well, we're going to actually get to see the Nats finally play?
I'm going to look at it here in a second, but if you were to summarize – as best you can. I mean, granted, you can't see everywhere. You are in Lorton, and that's in Virginia. How would you say Virginia's doing?
Today? Specifically,
yeah,
right
doing?
Now,
yeah.
This moment, I'd say Virginia's doing great.
Thank you very much. Hey, Bob! All right, so what we're looking at here, 81 right now, a lot of humidity, and it's going to get up to 84, 85, potentially at first pitch. And we look like we have no rain in the forecast here at the moment. So it looks like it's just going to be regular muggy and gross, like a normal August evening in the nation's capital. But looks like thunderstorms on the old Danny weather here from Thursday until the following Thursday on my 7-day forecast. There's a lot of that Chargers lightning bolt there on the helmet.
That's awful. The Tampa Bay Lightning. Yeah, so Dar just sent me the forecast for Half Street. Dar has cool ways of doing things, by the way.
He just knows stuff like this, man.
He just sent me what appears to be a phone screen grab, like within 5 seconds of me bringing it up. It was very interesting that he was able to pull that off. Regardless, those young whippersnappers with their technology, yeah. Dar was able to let us know. It looks like we're in the clear, so baseball will be played for the Nats this evening, which I'm excited about. Speaking of which, that will try to add a memory on August 4th so that many years from now we could say back on August 4th, 2020, this happened. But this date in Nats history today, we travel back 15 years. This is actually the first time this has happened in months of doing this. We've got a call from Dave Shea.
Dave Shea.
Charlie Slows has been the voice of the Nats since day one with Dave Shea in the first season. And then Dave Jagler took over for him in year two and has been the voice of the Nats with Charlie ever since. But Dave Shea was on the call in year one. This is 15 years ago today on August 4th. Brad Wilkerson, a grand slam to help John Patterson, who threw a 116-pitch, four-hit shutout, become a winner.
Three-two pitch hit high in the air, deep, deep to right, and it is gone! A grand slam for Brad Wilkerson, and the Nationals lead 7-0.
Brad Wilkerson, bro, and big nasty John Patterson. Blast from the past. How much fun was that first half of the season? How much fun was that group getting after it? Being in first place, I remember coming home on the taking the subway back after a game where they'd lost to the Mets, but still, I think, had a 9-game lead at that point. And a couple of Mets fans were running their mouth, and I was like, you got to do that 9 more times before we start. Oh, and then they did it 9 more times and a bunch more. And then the Nationals lost so many games in the second half of the season. With that inaugural run, man, nothing like it.
What's the dinner plan tonight, Danny?
I don't know. I don't actually know. We had.
How do you never know? Do you not ask your wife or do you not know in the morning? Like, I need to know hours in advance what we're eating for dinner. Do you just find out when you walk upstairs at like 6 p.m. or something? What's the deal here?
Pretty much. I mean, because my wife's going to be the one to make it, and it always comes across if I'm doing it like it's rude. Like my 6-year-old's like, what's for dinner? And like it's a pre-complaint. Because he like only like chicken nuggets and cheese pizza from our curry. Other than that, he like complains and whines. So it sounds very, when I do it, it sounds very like take it for granted, you know? So I don't know. I don't know what's in the fridge. But last night we did some good snassages with a little like vegetable medley. So we were going to cook on the grill, but obviously thunderstorms came. So we sort of did an impromptu in the pan thing. Very keto friendly, but pretty tasty because the sausages were good.
I like that. We are going HelloFresh, so I normally have the choice between, like, the HelloFresh meals, or then if we're not doing HelloFresh, we do, like, 3 nights a week, then I get to kind of pick and choose, because I'll go pick something up from the store, I get to call the shots a little bit, but I've got to be in the know, because I kind of plan my whole day around it.
Sure.
And also, it's going to determine my mood. Like, if I find out at the last minute that we're having something for dinner that I really don't want or like, it's heartbreaking, and it's going to crush me. If I know all day long, I can at least get myself in the spirit for, like, salmon or a fish or something. Mm-hmm. But I'm never just going to find out last minute because I got to be in the right mindset for bad news. I need to know in advance.
I get it. I understand. I mean, that's why, what I generally try to do to find out as much information as possible, I will ask, hey, what do you want to do for dinner? Leaving the possibility open that, I'm happy to control the dinner process, which means ordering something that's terrible for me, and I'll be so happy with that, but it means that my wife doesn't have to do anything, right? Like, I'll give you a break, not that I'm cooking, because that would give her even more anxiety, because I'd make such a huge mess, but why don't I control the dinner process?
When's the last time you cooked dinner? And I don't mean grilled meat as part of a meal,
right.
But you, like, it's not that your wife is gone, and you're just heating something up for the kids. Like, your wife is there, you're cooking for her, you, and both boys, and you're doing the whole meal by yourself.
If she's there, that hasn't happened since before we had children. In fact, we were living in New York City. I did it once, and somehow it hasn't happened again. I'll let you do the math, right? I mean, that's pretty much what it is. It gives her anxiety, me being in the kitchen, just because, like, I rattle things around. Like, it oozes
what do you mean,
off
rattle
of her.
Things around?
Like, I don't know where anything is, so I'm like opening and closing drawers rapidly, and like I don't place things gently or where they're supposed to go or whatever. I'm just a human being trying to make food, but like there's like a droplet of sauce will go somewhere. You can feel the waves of anxiety rolling off of her when she's not in control of that process and it's me. Like, the way that I do it is just so wrong to her that I wouldn't put her through that.
If you had to tonight, like she just said, hey, you got to make us dinner, have it on the table at 6 o'clock. What would you make?
My keto-friendly pasta from Thin Slim Foods with Rao's sauce. Very easy.
That sounds easy, and it's maybe the kids would like it. Everyone would be happy.
You never know. I mean, the kids complain about everything.
You're not winning with them. For no. Dar and Tommy and Danny, I'm Grant saying so long. Much appreciate you listening. Chad Dukes versus the world. Top of the hour, man.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.